Marx follows the ever-changing landscape to discuss the latest pressing issues relevant to brand owners in Europe and beyond. During this series, Marx members and special guests share updates, experiences, and opinions. This is IP Law Today. This is Talking Marx.
Hello, and welcome to a new episode of the Talking Marx podcast. I'm James Nerton, the Marx editor. In today's episode of the podcast, we'll be talking about the very hot topic of artificial intelligence, exploring in particular its impact on intellectual property, as well as some other areas of legal practice. Now, this is clearly a fast-developing area with rapid advances in machine learning, large language models, and generative AI, among other areas. And in this podcast, we'll discuss some of the sorts of applications that are already available, and we'll also speculate a little bit about what might be coming up. I'm delighted to be joined by two Marx team members who both have experience in this area. Mila Miseska is an IP lawyer with Play & Go in Malta, and she's a member of the Marx European Trademark Law and Practice team. And Jens Mattis is a partner of Allen & Overy in Düsseldorf, Germany. He's a member of the Marx Intellectual Asset Management team, and we'd like to acknowledge the help of other members of that team, especially Lauren Keller, in planning this podcast. So welcome to both of you, Mila and Jens.
Hello, James, and thank you for having us here. I'm very delighted to be part of the podcast and discuss this very interesting topic.
Hello from me, James, Mila, everybody out there. Greetings from Germany. I'm excited to talk about this topic indeed.
Great. I think it's going to be a very interesting discussion. So, Mila, I'd like to start with you, first of all. As I said, you're an in-house counsel at Play & Go. Perhaps you could tell us a little bit about Play & Go and also what sort of applications you're seeing in your work and what sort of things they can do.
Well, as some of you may know, Play & Go is a game production and an entertainment company. At Play & Go, we have a mass team of game developers, art designers, audio producers, and marketeers, which create a vast number of games each year. These games are delivered to players in many countries around the globe. As you can imagine, Play & Go has a very big and strong IP portfolio. We also license IP inwards and outwards, and we recently launched our music division, which is called Play & Go Music. When it comes to AI, I think it's becoming a very hot topic this year, and I believe it can be implemented in various areas. And companies can either decide, for example, to either develop the AI within the company, or they can also decide, for example, to license in software products. At Play & Go, at the moment, we do use some software products. However, I believe that it will be more difficult, let's say, for a company to develop its own software, software learning machine, as this would most likely depend on the company's capacity. It will take a lot of time, money, and most probably resources. So I think it will be much easier to just license in something that is already there on the market, which is developed by high-end professionals.
And do you see a lot of products on the market that are of interest?
Well, yes, there are. I think not only this year, but also in the previous years, there were already some products, some companies who are selling softwares that use AI. And as an in-house lawyer, something that could be very interesting for companies, it's those software that can help data-heavy areas. And when I say data-heavy areas, what I mean by this is to help collating, processing, and presenting a large amount of data. This can be particularly helpful if it's a repeating task, so the AI tool can be trained and learn how to process these things. And from what I've seen on the market, there are many AI softwares that, for example, can track competitors' behavior or broader industry trends or some consumer behavior monitoring. I think the results that you can obtain by using these AI softwares, they can help companies to enhance the quality of their product, the user experience, or even to develop a completely new product, let's say, if the consumer behavior dictates so. I've also seen other AI tools which can be used for the analysis, let's say, of IP portfolios, which can compare also the strength of the portfolio and can be later used for the development of the IP strategy of the company.
Interesting. Yeah. So, I mean, in the IP area, in the trademark area, we're talking about things like searching and clearance, which are obviously very data heavy, and competitor analysis, as you said, and maybe in enforcement as well, maybe identifying infringements and tracking them down.
Oh, yes, definitely. I think many companies already produce this kind of software, and I believe many companies out there licensing this kind of software, which help them, let's say, track down online infringements, and then also to help them enforce their IP.
Yep. Okay. And we'll come on in a minute, I think, to discuss some of the advantages and some of the challenges of those kind of products. But I want to bring in Jens now. Jens, as I mentioned, you're with a law firm, a well-known law firm, Allen & Overy. Could you tell us a little bit about how you're using AI, how the firm is using AI, and what opportunities it provides for you and for your clients?
Yeah, sure. Well, AI has been a big thing for us early on. I think it was in the media that we were the first law firm globally to apply Harvey, which is a tool that is now more broadly available. It's basically slightly simplified ChatGPT with a Harvard Law degree. So it's generative AI that is specialized on legal issues, legal questions, legal drafting, etc. And that early adoption, I think, helped us a lot. So it was not just selected a secret circle of people who were working with this, but we rolled it out across the firm so that we also got a real, you know, experience from how to use it in an everyday practice across different practice groups, across different countries, etc. You know, we have offices around the globe, which also means it's different cultures, different legal backgrounds, different legal systems, etc. That was a very deep and good insight, and we have now integrated Harvey into our everyday work. And as with many other large language models and generative AI tools, what do we use it for? I think in most cases, we use it to gain more productivity. So to be just faster with drafting, comparing, et cetera, et cetera. We also learn very clearly that these tools do not replace human beings. They do not replace the qualified lawyers, but they do a lot of prep work, and they do that in at such an amazing speed that you have a decent quality starting point, which just makes things easier and faster for you to draft. That can be anything from contract clauses, complete contracts, or slides for a training, or even marketing content, etc. Whatever it is there, you are just getting faster when you use these tools. Then we also apply artificial intelligence. That's the common term that we always use. Someone who is smarter than me, I read about that last year, says it shouldn't be called artificial intelligence. Most of AI models are actually applied statistics. And what does that mean? It means that everything that is somehow repetitive or that has a common underlying standard or something like this can become more productive, can be dealt with in a more productive manner with such AI tools. And the one thing that comes to mind in this, of course, are mass claims, mass proceedings. Dieselgate is one of the things in the past where you have many customers out there asserting certain claims based on the very same fact pattern. Or take, for example, another tool that we developed is for flight passenger rights. So managing claims that come in huge amounts, maybe at small value, each of them, but the overall value is very big for a client, for a certain company. And the pattern against which you check these claims is very similar. And with these tools, again, applied statistics, in these cases, you can use these tools to analyze, to do a pre-screening, to even get a preliminary assessment of success. How likely is it that a certain claim is justified or not justified? And the system will also be able to generate anything from maybe a court submission to a settlement proposal. None of these will be ready to go without the check by a lawyer, because we all know the problems with AI, hallucinations and other things. You know, nothing is completely perfect. But again, it just helps you to become much more efficient in dealing with these mass things.
So AI gives you the sort of first draft, and then you can build on that and maybe tailor it,
yeah,
to fix any problems if necessary.
Exactly. It's very good whenever the tasks are a bit repetitive, simply because the machine doesn't get tired. Maybe that is one of the key things. You know, the machine runs 24 hours and it doesn't get tired. It doesn't need any sleep. It's not being distracted. And that just gives you a big advantage. Exactly. I mean, these are tools that everybody knows. People know ChatGPT, Harvey, etc. But we went beyond that, and we actually do have a couple of products, two of which I would like to explain very briefly, that we have on the market. So we, as a law firm, we do sell software, and we do sell these products. We get money for products, AI products that we developed. One of them is Contract Matrix. That's how we called it. It's a software as a service, and it's actually available on the Microsoft App Store, where clients can download that and pay for it. What can you do with that? It's an AI tool where you can upload a contract, whatever it is. It can be a purchase agreement. It can be a financing agreement or whatever their lease, etc. You can upload that contract, and the system will compare this contract, whatever the format of that contract is, it will compare the contract against all the contracts that you have fed the system with. So meaning, for example, you have a new finance contract that comes from a counterparty. It doesn't look like yours, not at all. But the system will be able to tell you within a few seconds in what regards and to what extent this draft deviates from all the agreements that you've done in the past in this field. So in, for example, financing or lease agreements or so. So it will highlight to you where are the actual differences. And then you can also tell the tool, okay, thanks for this. Now I would like you to bring that closer in line with my standard contract. Or you make more specific, you give more specific instructions and say, please do the liability clause a bit more favorable for party A or B. Please change the governing law, say from English law to German law or vice versa. So these tools can be done at a very high quality in an amazing speed. Still, you would want to double check the results. But again, things that took you hours and days to complete are done within a second or a few minutes. And that just is an amazing advantage in terms of productivity, as I mentioned earlier.
Thank you very much. So, I mean, you've highlighted some of the benefits around particularly productivity and efficiency. Milo, do you see those benefits already in using AI, or are there other benefits that you're also conscious of?
Well, I mean, definitely, I think AI has more benefits than, you know, negative sides. Well, at least that's my view on it. But I would say from an in-house point of view, you can use AI like to reduce the time that you would spend, for example, in reviewing certain things. Let's say if you would take AI software that can check your IP portfolio, the software can do it much faster and can detect all the gaps that you have in a portfolio instead of you spending weeks and weeks and going through the, let's say, trademark portfolio and checking like in which countries you don't have a trademark registered, which class is not registered, etc. I think AI softwares can really reduce the time and they can provide you with the results much faster. So I think the use of AI can be very beneficial for law firms, but also for companies.
Yes, and if you can reduce the time, then you also reduce the cost in most cases.
Definitely. I mean, for companies, of course, there is the benefit of reducing time, but then companies would definitely have to consider choosing the right software because all these softwares, they can be quite costly. So, and then you also have the point of the accuracy as well as the accountability of the software that you choose and the information that you will feed in, who is going to take the responsibility for all that. And in this case, as Jens said, I would always definitely recommend having an actual human to review all the results. I would never 100% rely on the results that I would get from a software. An example would be, let's say, if you have an AI software for renewals, where the software can go to the renewals and give you recommendations. However, then in that case, the software might suggest that you drop certain trademarks that might be essential for your portfolio. So in that case, I wouldn't 100% rely on the results. I would always have someone to review them.
Thank you very much, Mila. And I can imagine in situations like mergers or demergers where you've got to deal with potentially a lot of rights to be re-registered or due diligence, whatever, in a very short period of time, it could be really valuable in that sort of situation.
Yeah, and as Mila said already, also for enforcement, right, to detect online enforcements. I mean, there's so much content out there that you would have to review, and the machines just do it better. Yes, there are some issues with, you know, it's not perfect, as we said. Okay, you need to double check it. But let's face it, we are not perfect either. So, you know, it doesn't mean that human beings who do the work will always be completely faultless. So when people say, yeah, but better beware with AI, you know, there might be mistakes in there. Well, you can take one step back and say, you know what, even if we do it, there might be mistakes in there too. So that's not necessarily a fundamental problem unless you have big hallucinations, which on the other hand, however, why do we talk about hallucinations? Because we identify them. So, you know, if these things happen, usually you see them and then you can rectify them.
And Jens, I mean, do you think there are any limitations to the potential of AI in the legal area? I mean, I think, you know, we talked about drafting agreements, drafting contracts, licenses, drafting pleadings for courts, for example?
Well, what are the limits? The sky is the limit, or what do you say here? I prognosis is very difficult when it concerns the future, right? I don't see particular limits. I mean, AI is something quite new. The way that the speed by which this has turned from a theoretical thing or a very technological nerd thing has turned into a product that everybody of us is using. That's amazing. So I think we are only at the beginning and the tools will become better and there will be even more areas where you can use them. I think, however, that one thing as lawyers, and that applies to in-house lawyers as much as to private practice, one thing that probably takes quite some more time, if it will ever be possible to do that by a machine, is the whole moderation job that we do. I mean, the whole weighing of interests and taking into account the personalities that are involved in decision-making within a company or when you have collaborations or also dispute resolution with a couple of parties involved. The organizations have their own agenda and interests, and the individuals on each side have their own background, cultural background, educational background, etc. So to moderate between these and to find the right tone in the communication, you know, finding the facts, finding the solutions or proposals is the one thing, but to communicate them in a way that people get convinced is another one. And to do that in a way that everybody with who has such different backgrounds and interests, that everybody says, yes, I like the idea. I find myself in that. And I think that's beneficial to my organization. So to convince people and give them comfort, that is something I think that is utterly humane and still requires a human being involved and to do the communication. The AI will be a huge part of the background work. And that might have a significant impact on the legal industry. So on my own business as a law firm, that might change over time. Does it mean we have fewer lawyers who have a different skill set also, who are more, you know, technologically versed, etc.? That could well be.
What do you think about that, Mila? Do you think that the nature of the kind of work you do will change from AI? Will you have different skills? Will you be looking to hire different types of people or be doing different types of work?
I think with AI, just we're not going to have job loss, but rather more automated workflows internally within our organizations or our companies. I think AI can be definitely used more to our benefit. I mean, we'll have to wait and see how it will develop over time. But for now, I just see the benefits, although there have been certain negative situations. For example, I found it very funny. I believe it was in the US where in the court of law, they submitted some case law, which was actually non-existent. And I believe so that was, I think, quite funny. So, but I do think that overall AI can be very helpful for most of the companies. I think we will be able to reduce a lot of time, a lot of costs. And I mean, maybe yes, for certain things, we will have to, instead of three people working on a single task, it will be just one person and the other two can be redistributed to help on other things. But I think we will be more effective, I think, as a society, as a working society, with the help of AI. Well, I hope that will be true.
Let's hope so, yes. And I wonder, do you think, I mean, the IP department of the future, the in-house IP department, you know, will it have more people who have software engineering skills or experience, you know, with technology alongside the lawyers and the patent and trademark attorneys and so on?
Well, I think overall, these days, everyone needs to be a bit tech savvy to be able to sustain in in today's working environment. I mean, you really need to have at least the basic skills and to be able to handle this kind of processes. Otherwise, I think your future is not very bright.
Right. So we all need to upskill.
I agree with Mila. I mean, on the other hand, I don't think that we will need software engineers as lawyers. You know, these still are and will remain different professions, so to say. And, you know, sometimes it helps to take a look into the past. And I don't have firsthand sources for that, but I remember times when there was no computer on a desk, but maybe a typewriter. You know, that was a mechanical thing that you typed submissions to a court. And for many decades now, we've been using software to process all our documents, to type, not even to print. We now submit anything with the courts electronically, with EUIPO electronically, et cetera. Nothing is in paper anymore. We do our document management system, not in a big archive in paper, but we do it electronically everywhere. So we are using a lot of software that maybe 40 years ago, you know, everything was tangible, mechanical, and in paper. However, even though we do this on an everyday basis, it doesn't mean that you had to learn information technology or programming and coding to survive in this world. It's as Mila said, you have to be tech savvy and you have to have some, you know, affinity and liking and being curious about these things, try them out. That, of course, it will be required even more in the future. But I agree with Mila that this is not a big revolution. It's rather another chapter in this evolution, and it will help us all. And when I said we might have less lawyers, it's actually what I meant was what Mila said, less lawyers on a single task. But there will be more tasks. You know, things are getting more and more regulated. There's more and more requirements for companies to scrutinize their portfolios, to check enforcement, et cetera, across the globe. And so the tasks do not reduce. And that also means that the work stuff, however, probably doesn't reduce.
And one question for you, Jens. We talked about how AI may do the kind of first draft, you know, the first stages of the work, and then a lawyer will review it. In the past, some of that first drafting was done by trainees or more junior lawyers. You know, if that work is going to be automated to some extent, how are you going to be training the lawyers of the future?
Good question. I think you know, you do not necessarily learn too much from a very first draft. Let's face it. You might learn the very first time you have to do a trademark application or draft a license agreement. Maybe the very first time you learn something from that. But the third, fifth, and tenth time you do the first draft, it's not actually something that you learn about it. What you learn from then is how this is being processed by more senior lawyers, how this is changing in the course of negotiations, et cetera, or when you have to litigate it. So I think the learning curve was not that high from these first drafts. And that means we will be able to train the junior lawyers on even more interesting pieces of work that will also give them more insights into the overall context of a certain piece of work, of a certain draft or something. So I think for junior lawyers, it will become even more interesting. And that will also mean that they learn even faster and become more valuable, probably also more quickly than it used to be.
Interesting. Very optimistic outlook. So we're coming towards the end of the podcast, I think. But Mila, are you optimistic overall about the impact of AI? And how do you think your work will be different in perhaps 10 years' time compared to what it is now?
Well, as I previously mentioned, I'm definitely optimistic, and I think just my work is going to be done much faster. I will have all the information, you know, presented to me without me going, you know, online researching and Googling, let's say, certain things. We will just have a software that will easily provide us with all the data that we need. I think the good thing about AI is that you can tailor it. These AI softwares, you can tailor them to your own needs, to the company needs. So like, depending on what kind of information you require, whether it's, as I said before, a competitor's behavior, player's behavior, depending on what the need of the company is. So I think it's going to be much, much better instead of us, you know, doing all these things manually. So it will definitely save us time, and it will let us make decisions much, much faster and be more efficient overall.
Yeah, and that's interesting what you say. I guess we'll as AI develops, we'll see more and more kind of tailored applications, you know, take generative AI or something and apply it to particular businesses or particular commercial needs.
Yeah, what I also found a very interesting AI software I wanted to mention is a software that basically provides data analytics to brand owners, and it basically tracks the effectiveness of their portfolio by blending real-time consumer purchasing patterns with the company's brand. I think this can be like something very interesting for a company, you know, to have it analyzed, because then it will be also interesting to see what kind of parameters the actual AI uses to get to these results. So I'm definitely very excited to see the future with AI.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. And Jens, I mean, I was very interested in what you were saying about the law firm, your law firm developing AI and actually making that available for sale as well. I mean, do you think this is an area of opportunity for law firms to develop these kind of products, or is it a distraction from the day-to-day work?
No, absolutely. I mean, I think this is the future, and advanced law firms who think really about the future and the business and also their clients' business will have to embrace that. There's new ways to deliver our service. You know, there's no way in leaning back and saying we've been doing this for 20 years, we're going to do that another 20 years. That has never worked, and it will work even less in the more accelerated future. So I would encourage every lawyer out there in private practice as much as in-house to think about this and to embrace the opportunities that are there for changing roles and broadening basically what can be done. So I think the risks and the question, are you optimistic or pessimistic about AI, they are more at a societal level. There is something, you know, that we need to also, as lawyers, we need to contribute to that discussion. What happens if governments use AI, you know, influencing elections, all that? We've seen that in the past, and that is not going to go away anymore. So these are topics that need to be discussed. And Mila also already mentioned the question about, you know, forcing AI products to some transparency, to explain a bit to the extent it's possible in an AI model, to explain a bit what are the parameters, how does the AI work, what functions, what decisions are actually being taken with the support of AI, etc. So the transparency aspect is also very important at a societal level. But, you know, coming back to the slightly lower level of what AI means for a business, for a company or a law firm, also the authorities, the IPOs of this world, etc., I'm very optimistic that this is a very positive development that will change our everyday work rapidly, and it will change it to the good.
Yeah, I think that whole topic of the regulation of AI is very interesting, and that might be a topic for another podcast, possibly. We'll have more time.
Absolutely.
But it is fascinating, isn't it, to see how people are using it in different ways. And actually, I was reminded, as people may know, one of the judges in the UK, Lord Justice Burse, he said openly, I think he used ChatGPT when he was drafting one of his judgments in the Court of Appeal, just for one paragraph, for definition, I think. But it just shows, even at the sort of highest levels of legal practice, AI can have a role to play.
And we hope he did that in compliance with the GDPR.
Absolutely.
Or other law, not the GDPR, but other law that applies. Yeah.
I'm sure he did.
Yeah.
So we've come to the end of the podcast. Thank you very much indeed to Mila and Jens for joining today's Talking Marks episode. And thanks to all of you for listening. I know, or I think there are several resources on this topic, on AI and IP, on the Marks website. I know it's an area that several Marks members and teams are working on, so there'll no doubt be more information on this topic in future publications, possibly other podcasts and Marks events. So do look out for those. Otherwise, we'll have another episode of the Talking Marks podcast available very soon. But for now, from the three of us, thank you very much and goodbye.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you. Bye.
Join us again soon for another podcast on an important issue for brand owners. To find out more on our website and guest speakers, visit marks.org/podcast.